Hey. Good morning. Good morning. So, this reading is The Mask by Maya Angelou. So it's an adaptation from Paul Laurence Dunbar's We Wear the Mask. We wear the mask that grins and lies. It shades our cheeks and hides our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. With torn and bleeding hearts, we smile and mouth the myriad subtleties. Why should the world think otherwise in counting all our tears and sighs? Nay, let them only see us while we wear the mask. We smile, but oh my God, our tears to thee from tortured souls arise. And we cry, oh baby doll, now we sing. The clay is vile beneath our feet and long the mile. But let the world think otherwise, we wear the mask. When I think about myself, I almost laugh myself to death. My life has been one great big joke, a dance that's walked, a song that spoke. I laugh so hard, ha ha, I almost choke when I think about myself. 70 years in these folks' world, the child I works for calls me girl. I say, ha ha ha, yes ma'am, for working's sake. I'm too proud to bend and too poor to break. So I laugh until my stomach ache when I think about myself. My folks can make me split my side. I laugh so hard, ha ha, I nearly died. The tales they tell sound just like lying. They grow the fruit, but eat the rind. I laugh until I start to cry when I think about myself and my folks and the children. My fathers sit on benches, their flesh count every plank. The slats leave dents of darkness deep in their withered flank, and they are gnarled like broken candles, all waxed and burned profound. They say, but sugar, it was our submission that made your world go round. There in those pleated faces, I see the auction block, the chains and slavery's coffles, the whip and lash and stock. My father speak in voices that shred my fact and sound. They say, but sugar, it was our submission that made your world go round. They laugh to conceal their crying. They shuffle through their dreams. They step and fetched a country and wrote the blues and screams. I understand their meaning. It could and did derive from living on the edge of death. They kept my race alive by wearing the mask. All right. So meditation time. I've been doing all these meditations. All right. So I've one paragraph from an essay from Audre Lorde, and then I have the poem from which the first part of the sermon title comes from. I figured, why not? It's Sunday. Kick up our heels. All right, so this is Audre Lorde, Poetry Makes Something Happen. Poetry makes something happen, indeed. It makes you happen. It makes your living happen, whether or not you deal with it. A poet is by definition a teacher also. If I never teach another class, every poem I create is an attempt at a piece of truth formed from the images of my experience and shared with as many others as can or will hear me. This is something poetry shares with other hard work. Making real poems is teaching. Digging good ditches is teaching. Survival is teaching. The only human state I know of that is not teaching is sleep. And that is a property which sleep shares with death. Yeah. And then the poem, The Life I Lead by Nikki Giovanni. I know my upper arms will grow flabby. It's true of all the women in my family. I know that the purple veins, like dead fish in the sin, will dot my legs one day. And my hands will wither while my hair turns grayish white. I know that one day my teeth will move when my lips smile, and a flutter of hair will appear below my nose. I hope my skin doesn't change to those blotchy colors. I want my menses to be undifficult. I'd very much prefer staying firm and slim, to grow old like a vintage wine fermenting in old wooden vats with style. I'd like to be exquisite, I think. I look forward to grandchildren and my flowers, all my knickknacks in their places, and that quiet of the bombs not falling in Cambodia, settling over my sagging breasts. I hope my shoulder finds a head that needs nestling, and my feet find a footstool after a good soaking with Epsom salts. I hope I die warmed by the life that I tried to live. I like that poem. That's really nice. Okay. Put this over here. Slide all right, we slide right, all right. We slide right on in. I keep asking, like, oh, is there someone who'll say, like, and now we'll do this, and now we'll do that, but there isn't. All right. Well, hey, everybody. This is the part where I say, I'm like, hey, what's going on? All right. So y'all are good? Y'all good? The singers? All right. I've never been to this church. Y'all are cool. I like it. It's really nice. So, hi. So, my name's Courtney Marshall, and as it says in the intro, I currently teach English over at PEA. I came here from UNH, where I taught English and Women's Studies and Justice Studies for a number of years before I woke up in the middle of the night and decided I didn't want to do that anymore and quit. And so, people like to hear about why I quit. And sort of what makes somebody walk away from a career like that. And so I'll tell you why I walked away. But don't tell anybody else. No, you can tell whoever you want to tell. All right. So the title of my remarks today are I hope I die, warmed by the life that I tried to live, Black Feminist Legacy. And so I've been thinking a lot about legacy. I've been thinking a lot about growing older. I just turned 40 this year. And I'm very happy to turn 40. I was so excited. And I'm one of those people who, I don't have any children, but I want to be a grandma somehow. And I don't know how that's going to work. But like I just want to be like a nana. Like, that's all I want. I just want to hand out peppermints. And one of the things I really love about working at PEA is that I have students who, you know, come over and, you know, they're in my classes. And I had two students who came over. And they come in, I'm offering them food. I'm like, sit down, like, eat. And I, you know, one person, she saw I had a box of cream of wheat in the cabinet. And she said, we had cream of wheat at home. I said, you can come over anytime and I'll make you cream of wheat. Like, I will cook anything you want. So now they always want me to, like, fry them chicken and make them macaroni and cheese and stuff. So that's really cute. I really like that. So again, I think a lot about what it means to be a 40-year-old Black woman. I think about what it means to be that here in Exeter, New Hampshire. I moved here from Rochester, New Hampshire. You know, shout out to Rochester. But I think a lot about what that means and about what growing old means and what I'd like my legacy to be. And also what my relationship is with the younger people around me. Okay. So I'm going to start out by sharing just a little bit. I gave meditation at PEA a couple of weeks ago. So I just want to share just a little bit of the beginning of that to help situate what I'm going to talk about today. And so I always start out with a quote from Lucille Clifton every time I do any type of sort of public work. And in her poem, she has a quote that says, "Come celebrate with me the fact that every day something has tried to kill me and has failed." And I love that line because every day, this morning, something tried to kill us and it did not succeed. And we are all here today. So I come to PEA after a long sort of road. I started at Dartmouth. I always tell people that too. I started at Dartmouth and I dropped out by Thanksgiving. So congratulations to me. And I eventually went to community college back in New Jersey. I'm from Newark, New Jersey. I then went on to Rutgers. I was an English and Women's Studies major. I studied Black women writers, fell in love with Black women writers when I took my first class with my first Black female English professor. And before that, I didn't know that there were Black women English professors who were chairs of departments and who
actually made their career studying black women writers. And that to me was really exciting because I come from a family where my father went to second grade. My mother didn't graduate high school, so I didn't come from a family that had a lot of literacy, at least on that level. But I did have a grandmother who wanted us to go to the library every Saturday, and she would drag me and my little sister to the library every single Saturday to pick out books. And I was telling a student, one who came over yesterday, that I'm so grateful that they're for her, because we had now today we have books. We have some books that are really important in black literature, and I wouldn't have had them unless my grandmother had bought them. So I always say, if there's a book that you think that maybe a child in your life might need, just buy it and let it sit. And one day that kid is going to come back and see that book and say, thank goodness somebody had the good sense to buy that book, because now it's out of print and now we can't find it. All right, so I always think of that. So I came to UNH. I was an English and Women's Studies professor, supposedly doing the good work. I went to UCLA. I fell in love with prisons. Fell in love with prison abolition, I should say. And I came here wanting to do work with New Hampshire's prisons. And I started doing a reading discussion group through the Humanities Council. So I went to the prison up in Berlin. I still go up to Berlin to do reading groups with the men there. I've also gone to the Concord Men's Prison, and I've been in Goffstown, and I've been in Shea Farm. Shea Farm is also where I teach Zumba, so that's a lot of fun as well. So I got really excited about all this work, but I was also really stressed out. As I'm sure you know, social injustice makes you stressed, makes you kind of sort of angry, and you need to sort of have an outlet. So I started going to the gym. And I noticed when I went to the gym that there were a lot of people who were saying really mean things about themselves at the gym, saying how they didn't feel like they were good enough, they didn't feel like they were thin enough or strong enough. And I saw that constantly being reinforced by instructors, by the posters in the gym, just the language of the gym. And so I said, I wonder what I can do as an instructor. And so I decided to become a personal trainer and a group fitness instructor, and I started teaching classes just because I wanted to create a different type of environment. So, what is the environment that I try to create? It comes directly out of my work with black women writers. And so I tell people that when you work with me, or you know, when you are blessed to work with me, you are getting someone who cares about keeping you safe, who believes that no means no. So I'm not one of those trainers where if you say no, they tell you do five more. You can do one more. No, no means no, right? Every class I teach, I say, your body, your workout. And that's very important to me because I come from a legacy of people who have not had control over their own bodies and who did not get to say no and who did not have their wishes respected. And so I always believe that, that when you say no, that means no. Right, I believe that everybody needs to feel successful. It's not my desire to have some people feel that they're super strong and they feel so totally accomplished, and other people feel absolutely dejected. Right, that's not okay with me. And again, that comes right out of my academic work. So when I think about Black feminist legacy, I think about how many students have I introduced to Black women writers, both in the classroom and outside of the classroom. So when people take my class, and I don't call them boot camp because I have a really hard time with the militarization of fitness. Like, I don't like that all, so I don't call it that. We'll have fruit camp, so we'll have, like, fruit and, like, tropical music, and it's a lot of fun. I teach family fitness over at the Exeter Y, and I always say this is the place where small people and big people get together and work out, but the smallest person, the slowest person creates the pace, right? So if the little people can't do it, we don't do it. Right, and if the adults feel a way about it, well, their door is never moved. The door is always in the right place, but everybody loves it. And what I like is that people have grown to, and this is what's so astounding to me, you know, I live here, and there aren't many black people here. I know, shocked. People are like nodding. They're like, yeah, you're right. There aren't many black people here, and there aren't many black women here. Right? And that's lonely. I'm not going to lie. Like, that's lonely. Like, I miss black people. I miss black women. I miss hearing music. There's so many things I miss being here. But I'm always aware, and I always tell people here that I meet who are white, that you benefit from black feminism. When I say something nice to you, when I do nice things, it's because you're benefiting from black women like Nikki Giovanni and black women like Audre Lorde. Like, you're benefiting. So when people tell me, you know, that diversity is too hard, I say, no, it ain't. It's never too hard. It's never been too hard. They'll tell you that, though, right? They'll tell you that black, you know, diversity is too much. Okay. So I decided in the middle of the night to quit my job. Right. So I've been going to the gym. I've been loving it. And what I found was that I didn't like being a professor. I didn't like being sort of trapped away in the classroom. I didn't like the ways that I was sort of being told in overt ways, but also covert ways that, you know, Shakespeare was more important than Audre Lorde. That my students in the classroom were more important than the incarcerated people that I was working with. That somehow that I had arrived. That the more white people I was around, the sort of higher in status I'd gotten, right? So the more I distanced myself away from people who look like me, who talk like me, the better off I was. And I didn't like that at all. So I had this poem, June Jordan, poem about my rights, and I've been teaching it for a while, and there's a line in there that says, wrong is not my name. And so I woke up in the middle of the night thinking about that poem, and I decided to quit my job at UNH, and it was the best thing I ever did. So I tell people, don't be afraid to quit. If you don't like it, just bounce, right? And if you're hungry, come by, and I'll feed you. That's what I always tell people, right? Because that's who, it's true. It's one thing for people to tell you, like, oh yeah, just quit, and then you don't see him no more. I tell you, like, quit. You want, you know, you want to eat, you want, you know, I'm here. So part of that meant I had to sort of change my relationship to money, so that had to happen. So I really had to think about the role of capitalism, but also the language of scarcity, the language of lack, the way that I was holding on to a job that I absolutely hated, so that I could have health insurance, so I can go to therapy to talk about this job that I absolutely hated. Right? And that's what it was. And I like to be honest about that. Because what I found, again, this is related to this idea of black feminist legacy, that because I quit, other people said, hey, I don't like my job either. And I don't tell people just to quit, you know, it worked for me. Because now I know I can walk away from anything. And I believe that, you know, they say free people, and I walk around free. Y'all don't know. But I tell people, like, if you have a side interest, something you really like to do, give it a shot. You have a hobby, you don't get to do it because you're so busy working and feeling miserable, spend more time on your hobby. Give it a shot. What's the worst that can happen, right? You knit some blankets. Okay, great. You know, you get a dog. Go for it. It's really great. So again, that's another way the black feminist legacy works. So I find that when I leave people, I leave them and they say, oh yeah, I never thought about, like, maybe I would like to, you know, start that rock band, you know, in my spare time. Or maybe I'm going to make spare time for myself. So all these little things that we can do. So I teach Zumba. Does anybody like Zumba in here? I see Susan. I like it. Wait. I usually teach on Sunday morning, so it's really funny. I teach in Rochester. But I'm not teaching today. It's because I'm here with y'all. So I told him, like, maybe we'll do some Zumba. So one of the things that is really important to me is community accountable fitness. So one of the other legacies of black feminism is being accountable to community. I'm accountable to those who are accountable to me. I'm not accountable to institutions. I'm not accountable to any political administration. I'm accountable to you all, right? Because June Jordan wrote that nobody mean more to me than you. Right. And there is no, I said this during my my meditation. Another great friend of mine, Alexis Gum, says, she talks about sistering and how sistering is a verb. Sister is a verb. Community is a verb. It's what you do. It's not what you're a part of. And she says that sistering is this, she says, it's this impossible belief that we can reach one another through anything. Right? There's nothing that we can't navigate, nothing that we have not already navigated in order to reach one another. And I believe that with every piece of me. That's why I say that if there's anything that you need, I have. Everything I have access to is to be shared. Right? So community accountable fitness means that, Yes, I work at the Y because I like the Y. I work over at the Exeter Y. It's a good time. I hang around and talk to people and ask them about their workout. It also means that I spend a lot of time teaching free classes. So I teach two Zumba classes through Exeter Parks and Rec, which I love. They are the highlight of my work week. The highlight of my week is family fitness because I like teaching little kids and I like teaching their parents because the kids like to laugh at their parents and that's fun. But yeah, so that's really important to me, that I go and I take the work that I do and I go out into places that don't get served. So that means people who are home during the day, right? People who don't have credit cards, right? You don't want to go to a gym and swipe a credit card. That doesn't mean that you don't get to work out and have a good time, right? And it doesn't mean that you don't get to have someone who's actually learned, right, who's actually gone through the training to give you a safe and fun workout. So I take all the work I do, and again, it's just me and my car and some weights. So when you talk about being engaged, I'm engaged. I tell people, where do you need me to be? Right, that is all I want to do, is to live a life of service, and hopefully, as Nikki Giovanni says, die warm by the life that I tried to live. So I go into prisons, I go into housing projects, I go into senior centers, I go anywhere that you'll take me for free, and I tell people, don't pay me anything. I don't want any money, because when money gets into it, I'm not interested. I tell people the best way you can pay me is like share it with somebody else, right? So if I teach you how to do something or I say something nice to you, go share it with somebody else, right? And again, that's the way those legacies work. So all this is just me taking in what I've learned from all my reading. Again, a wide range of people who are college educated, people who have never left, their neighborhood, right? All this stuff goes into all the work that I do. And then I get to take that and shoot it back out into the world and hopefully let it spread and spread and spread. And so I just want to end with just some quotes. I always tell people that I give out black women's quotes like vitamins because I believe in them so much. So I'm going to give you a few. So Nikki Giovanni says that black love is black wealth. Gwendolyn Brooks says that we are each other's harvest. June Jordan says that we are the ones we have been waiting for. Fannie Lou Hamer says that nobody's free until everybody's free. Audre Lorde says that I am deliberate and afraid of nothing. Maya Angelou says that I am the hope and the dream of the slave. And Zora Neale Hurston, and this is where my sort of fitness initiative title comes from, tells us to jump at the sun. We might not land on the sun, but at least we get off the ground, right? So the last thing about black feminist legacy is now you have a whole bunch of black women's words in you, in your heart, and you can go out just as I do, right? Go out and spread it and let it push you to do good work, right? So even folks who've never read these black women, who might not work with a black woman, I know it's sad. I know, it's sad. But now they can also sort of get this really good message. And then you also wind up participating in black feminist legacies. So awesome. So thank you so much. Now go do it.